6 years after our last Hunger Games episode. Wait, 6 years? Really?
What?
We've done a lot of these. Anyway, 6 years after the first part, will we rally behind the Mockingjay and storm the Capitol? Or has storming the Capitol kind of lost its luster in the intervening years? Politics are complicated. Anyway, The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 2 was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Yeah, they would have completely rewritten that.
I don't know. It's hard to say. They might have changed their language a bit.
That's what I mean. They wouldn't have said, we need to storm the Capitol. No.
Because it's not the same thing, right?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I do have things to say. It is very weird watching this movie in our current historical moment.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was bored.
Yeah.
With
no,
this one.
It is boring.
Yeah.
Just to be clear.
But I think part of that is what
we live this.
We're it's desensitized now. It's like, yeah.
The dystopia is just topia now. I don't know how the root words work, but my name's Sean Collier. I am here with just two drag queens looking for their spotlight. It's Camila Adams.
Everyone's so crazy.
Robin Hitchcock.
I can't do that voice. I love the Birdcage.
Yeah, the Birdcage, 91.67. Woo-hoo. 91 and two thirds. Wait a minute. I don't think that's right. Hold, please.
Okay, while you're looking up that score, I just want to say, anybody who appreciated the You're in Danger Girl joke, that was Camila's joke. Mm-hmm. She sent me a message and said, you should make this editing joke, and I did it.
And also, while we're at it, like, this Hunger Games Mockingjay is just a big ruse episode just so we can talk about Sinners later, because, I mean, I don't... Yeah.
Right, if you're like...
Stick around.
If you're like, I don't care about this movie, neither do we.
It's all I can think about for the past 2 weeks. And
We won't take that long. I'm sorry. The Birdcage, 92 and a third.
Oh, my gosh,
92
even
and a third. Yeah. Which makes our current top 10. Get Out remains in first place at 95. Then The Birdcage.
Holy moly.
Yeah. Wow. Our number two film. Followed by Fight Club, Carrie, Titanic, Silence of the Lambs, Alien, Men in Black, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction, the new...
Bottom bitch.
Yes, of the top 10. So, will that fall? Not today. Robin, you and I at least both listened back to our...
I figured listening back to the old one would be a faster way to do previously
too.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought we were pretty smart.
Yeah.
You know what? We're good at talking about movies.
Yes, we are. That pushed me to listen to more old ones too.
Isn't that fun?
Yes.
I do think we're better now. I mean,
oh, sure.
With, as we said, 7-8 years of practice.
Yeah.
When did we start?
It had to have been 2019, I believe.
Oh, right. Because it was right before you became a mom.
Yep.
Uh-huh. So, yeah. We've been at it. We've been at it for a while.
It doesn't seem like that long. It doesn't seem like 6 years.
I mean,
well, there's the pandemic.
Right. I was going to say, it's been a weird 6 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. But our conclusion to that one, if I can summarize it, was there's nothing wrong with this. We just don't care all that much. Mm-hmm. Same again.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's basically what we just... Echoing what we said in the first part is that it should have been one movie.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Like, we really could have done well with 1 2.5-hour movie. It would have been fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, this was just a bunch of filler, the second half.
And
so many speeches.
So many speeches. And that one speech from the woman who ends up being president.
Yeah.
I'm like, why do they even need Katniss? Why don't they just have this woman be the person rallying the troops?
Right.
That's my core... That is the core problem I have come to with the franchise.
Okay.
So save it for the post-segments part. But,
oh, boy.
I think I have a theory.
Hunger Games theories, very soon. In keeping with our, we promise we won't talk about it for too long, let's get through our segments. First, to tell you what happens in sort of half of one Hunger Games book. Kinda. I didn't pick up the book to look up how many pages this represents, but well, I feel like it's less than half of
it's
got
to be like 350 pages, I'm assuming. I just finished The Sunrise on the Reaping, and that was about 350.
Oh, I do want to hear more about that
I
as
do.
Well.
Yes.
Here's Robin Hitchcock with a 60-second recap.
Go.
We pick up right after Peter Brett tried to kill Katniss because the Capitol brainwashed him. There's an hour of conversations as every side character needs some moment of closure. Katniss joins a team of rebels in their invasion of the Capitol, which turns into a pretend Hunger Games because they have set up a bunch of elaborate booby traps. That's what I said, booby traps. The Capitol appears to surrender, and then they send out all the kids and then bomb them all. Or did they? Snow tells Katniss it was a false flag situation and it was actually the rebels who bombed them. Coin has the surviving winners vote on if they should hold a final Hunger Games for Capitol children. Katniss votes yes in exchange that she gets to kill Snow. At the public execution, she kills Coin instead. Snow's ripped apart by a mob. Katniss can't forgive Gale for his role in Primrose's death, so she has a simple kind of life with PETA in a bad epilogue, because I guess YA series do that.
Yeah.
Was that under a minute? Because I didn't practice. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
still
not
had like 20 minutes, 20 seconds to spare.
Well, that's because the first hour of the movie is just conversations.
This is all I remember from the book. Half of that epilogue is of that completely unnecessary epilogue is original to the movie.
Oh, really?
The book ends the last
real
line.
Real or not real?
That's the last line in the book. And so he said that, and I was like getting out of my chair. And then she like stares at a baby for 4 minutes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I assume they stuck around and
I don't think
procreated.
I don't think we needed that, the movie ending.
We deeply don't need it. And also, it's a bummer. Like, the whole deal with Katniss's character is that she won't be who you want her to be. Mm-hmm. And then she has the most stereotypical, boring wife and kids life.
Well, like, I would imagine that had probably had just a lot to do with... She probably wanted to get as close to normalcy as possible.
Sure.
And then losing her sister. Like, that.
Yeah.
That's valid. You're right.
Actually, the best scene in this movie, in either Mockingjay movies, is her screaming at the cat. is both the mild humor but also kind of crushing weight of like she finally lets all of those feelings out and it's screaming in a cat, and it's understandable, like that is what would break you.
And the cat is unfazed. He's like, I know, I get it, but seriously, do you have any snacks at all?
This one was released November 20th of 2015, the 30th number one movie of that year, winning its opening weekend with $102.6 million, and then won four more weekends? Even this one won more than a month and held off some stuff I didn't think it would. It won its second weekend with $52 million, beating Disney's The Good Dinosaur.
Don't know what that
Forgot that existed.
That's pretty good.
Okay. I have the only person on the planet Earth who has seen it, Sean.
I says sheepishly, it's pretty good.
I have a soft spot for Disney's The Good Dinosaur. It's a dinosaur movie, and it's cute.
Have you seen Dinosaur from the year 2000? The year 2000?
No, but I rode the ride.
Okay.
Which is on its way out.
Oh, yeah, because no one has seen that movie either. I've seen that one.
$39.1 million. But yeah, that it's a holiday-adjacent Disney animated film that only made $40 million, allowing Hunger Games to continue its reign. Also beat Creed. Creed was not a quick winner.
Oh.
Creed finished third that weekend.
Ugh. That's ew.
They will have their revenge.
Yeah, exactly. Because Creed isn't on our list, is it?
No, I think...
Two
and three. Then it fell, but everything else completely missed. So it won its third weekend with $18.8 million, holding off Krampus, which got to 16.2. And it's like, Krampus was close, but just not enough. And again, its fourth weekend, it won with $11.4
million. $11.4
million
won a box office weekend in the year of
in
our Lord,
December
2015.
December 2015, holding off... Ron Howard's Moby Dick origin story in the Heart of the Sea. It's like the movie that's specifically about the whale.
Hemsworth, isn't it?
Yeah.
Main Hemsworth.
Yeah.
the real Hemsworth.
The Hemsworth. $11 million. So yeah, 4 week winner just because other stuff was missing that hard.
Wow.
$281.7 million total. Seventh top grossing film. Because that year was so loaded that only got you to seventh. The stuff ahead of it is The Force Awakens, Jurassic World, Avengers Age of Ultron, Inside Out, Furious 7, and Minions.
Wow.
Okay.
So legit
yeah.
only number seven. We covered this in the previous episode 6 years ago. This was still seen as disappointing at the time. Hunger Games made $408 million. Catching Fire made $424 million. Mockingjay Part 1 made $337 million. And this one, $281 million, was a big drop off from all right. the previous. Songbirds and Snakes? Is that the new one?
I think so.
Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Saw it, read
Did
it,
you
saw
like it?
It was fine.
It was, yeah.
I got really mad at it.
Why?
Because I don't care about snow as a young Republican. And...
See, I did.
Oh, interesting.
And the Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. Mm-hmm. I want to know how he becomes such as this nasty person that oh. is okay that quote to quote this movie, you know, you and I both know I'm not above killing children.
Yeah.
So it's like, and I still don't really learn that.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's so late in the thing.
Yeah,
I this is another case where I had to read my own review of Songbirds and Snakes, and I remembered that like for 2/3 of that movie, he's just the hero.
Yeah.
And then they like try to pack the descent into the last like extra hour that happens after the games.
Yeah.
So
unless there's going to be another one.
Yeah. Also, too much singing.
Yeah, it wasn't.
I don't know. That's what I like.
Oh.
I liked Rachel Zegler's character.
Yeah, nope. And I did want to say Viola Davis having the time of her life.
Yeah, absolutely.
I enjoyed that for her.
And Peter Dinklage. Like,
oh, yeah. Okay.
It was
fine. I think I was too harsh on it, but man, I was like, what the fuck movie?
Yeah, I have accepted that it's not going to be whatever else they come out with. It's not going to be the same as like those first two Hunger mm-hmm. Games
right.
books or movies. And I'm obviously, you know, a different person than I was at that point in time, but it's still, I still get something out of it. I don't know.
Legit.
I am desperate for a thing that will not happen, which is the upcoming Jurassic Park film to be good and make money, because here's why. Allegedly, this is the one that has nothing to do with any previous film, is just some other shit happening in the world that has some dinosaurs on some island.
Okay.
And that's what I want from all of these.
Yeah.
With Hunger Games, I want...
District 4 story?
I just want a movie that ends at some Hunger Games. You know, it can be before Katniss because there aren't Hunger Games anymore, but just show me another Hunger Games and you don't have to tie it in.
Yeah.
Because that could be, or if I still was willing to engage with Harry Potter, show me some other year at Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Don't be like, well, here's this and here's actually Dumbledore is this. It's like, no, just do another thing in this world. I like the world.
Right.
And so when they're like, yeah, Jurassic Park story, none of the original characters, no connection. I'm like, oh, if this makes a lot of money.
You're right, yeah.
And is good, then everything will be better.
Yeah, but that makes sense.
I don't think we're going to get that.
You don't think it's going to make a lot of money, or you don't think it's going to be good, or
either.
Both? Okay.
Both.
I think it's going to make a lot of money, but I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's very hard to figure that out anymore. Songbirds and Snakes made the least amount of money, $166 million, but it came out recently, and it had a much, much lower budget, so that wasn't terrible.
Okay.
Enough that what's... Did you just read Sunrise on the Reaping?
Yeah.
That got greenlit into a movie before the book was out. So
okay.
They're still doing it.
Also pretty, like, they're casting for that. The one person that I know is Jesse Plemons as Plutarch.
Ooh. Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Perfection. I'm like, mm-hmm. yes, a young Plutarch? Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
In case you're wondering, no Hunger Games has been nominated for an Oscar in any category.
I was wondering. I was trying to think back and nope.
Not even costume?
No,
I know, right. That seems like an oversight. Or makeup.
Yeah.
This has to be the only mega franchise where that's not the case.
Yeah.
It was kind of close for song a couple of times, because there's some songs for
right.
these. But no Oscar nominations. The series does have 9 MTV Movie Awards.
Of course.
And 9 People's Choice Awards. This film is responsible for just one of those MTV Movie Awards. And it was bullshit. Best Hero that year, which was an award for a while. Jennifer Lawrence won Best Hero, beating Chris Evans as Captain America, The Rock in San Andreas, Daisy Ridley in The Force Awakens.
What?
Paul Rudd for one Ant-Man or another, and Charlize Theron in Fury Road.
Oh my God!
No.
Come on.
I reject that.
Invalid.
Yeah. Oh.
I'll give you The Rock in San Andreas, and even that, I'm like,
I don't know.
I don't know. He flew a helicopter around a lot of earthquakes.
Yeah.
The whole point of Katniss is that she's just a person.
Yeah. Songbirds and Snakes came out in 2023, did pretty well, as I mentioned. Not great, both critically and commercially. Good enough for the early green light. Sunrise on the Reaping will be released November 20th, 2026. So about 18 months from now. Yes, this is the final performance of Philip Seymour Hoffman. He had filmed all but two major scenes and a bit of standing in the background when he died February
2nd. Is that why Woody Harrelson is like, he left a message for you?
Yes.
I'm like, oh.
Yeah, yeah. Like sadness.
February 2nd, 2014, he passed away. They toyed with the idea of digitally inserting CGI.
They did fine with whatever they did.
It worked out.
They rewrote instead. The big thing was that scene where Haymitch reads the letter. You can tell there are times when he's like sitting at a table that that appears like this is unused footage. I can't figure out what the other scene. No one seems to confirm what the other unshot scene was. It was maybe the Finnick and whoever the fuck wedding scene. Like he probably would have had some business. And they just wrote him out of it and gave those lines to other people.
Very least the videographer.
Yeah. Still very sad.
And yeah, that's what I'm like. Never gonna be over it. It's like him and Chadwick Boseman. Like I'm just like, you had so much more.
I know.
There was like, so much more you could have done.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm never gonna be over it.
And it's. I don't want to tell people not to get their millions of dollars and do the franchise and, you know, make all of that money. But like,
remember, it could be your last one.
Yeah. You spent so many of your last years on this shit. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, just one quick trivia note, because I don't want to get too deep, because why are we here?
to talk about sinners.
But this is impressive. Computer consoles, big, bulky set piece, right? The same computer consoles are Mission Control in Apollo 13, then like the command center in this movie in District 13. They're using the Apollo 13 computers.
Huh.
And then those same machines were used again for Hidden Figures. And allegedly, if you look closely enough, there are Panem stickers in Hidden Figures because they're using
these
again.
That's a good excuse to rewatch Hidden Figures, the movie that I love.
It might not be in focus, but you'll see like a weird triangular thing on the thing, and that is because it's
a
Panem label.
And this is why we need to make real props instead of just CGIing everything.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, with the tariffs, and no, we don't have time.
We don't have the time.
We don't have time
not
or strength
today.
Here's what jumps out at me, because I said on the previous episode, maybe I need to get really back into Hunger Games to fill the J.K. Rowling ripping Harry Potter out of my soul. but here's the problem with these. The structure of these stories is great, ruined by these movies. Mm. We're going to the games. We're at the games. It's it's the rare two-act structure in all three of those books that totally works.
Right.
The problem is that unless Katniss is on the battlefield killing people, her character is constantly just put into a situation where she has nothing to do, really.
Because she doesn't want to.
Because she doesn't want to.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting character, but it's not dramatically interesting.
Something I said in the last episode is that the books rely on her internal monologue.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then we don't get that in the movies. Right. And she's a quiet person for good reason.
Yeah.
But that leaves us kind of cold.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we're just all just kind of like following her around. And the most we'd get way too much of this PETA or Gale. Any of those soldiers, I just at any point, I just would have loved one of those soldiers to be like, enough.
Natalie Dormer could have done that.
Right, exactly.
Or Mahershala. I was Team Gale, okay? But
until I watched this.
Well, they did a really good job, I will say. And I think that this is in the book, but I think they pulled it off even better in the movies. And I do think Liam Hemsworth deserves some credit here. Mm. Like, they really do show this guy was ruined by war.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, when he's like, if they're sweeping the floors, they're as bad as them.
Yeah.
Like, that hit really hard this time because there are people in this world literally doing that.
Right, right.
And I just was like, that is a thing that happens to people,
yeah.
right? And so it makes sense to me that she would fall out of love with him. Right. What doesn't make sense to me...
That she would fall in love with Peeta?
That is exactly
Be
it.
Be by yourself, Katniss.
Right? I mean, choose you. Need,
right? I have made my choice, and I choose me.
That would have made such a stronger statement had we just ended it with at Katniss being by herself.
Yes.
And like, you know, whatever, like maybe 20 years down the road, you know, okay, Peeta, fine. But.
Like my best friend's wedding.
Right. I said it last time and it's only more true this time. It's I don't want to map Katniss's sexuality onto her. Jenna Malone is right there.
Right.
She is so eager to hate fuck Katniss in this movie. She can't wait.
The scene where Katniss is like, I want to look him in the eyes when I kill, like the look on Jenna's face mm-hmm. at that moment, that is when it's like absolutely 100%. She's like, let's go behind these curtains.
Yes! Right now. That in this hour of conversations, I do like that we got that conversation.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
I had a thing to say. Oh, look on the face. One of my favorite moments in this film is when the mob rips Snow apart.
Oh, yes.
And she's at first really upset, and then you see her that, be that like, Grinch, never mind, I love this.
That Grinch smile?
Yes. So good, and also made me want to watch Mother. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a good actor, is the thing.
Sure.
Like,
she's very likable.
She's had a really weird career. She's mm-hmm. incredibly likable, but I also think she's a legit great actor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You don't see it as much in this movie, but you see yeah. it in that moment.
Yeah. And we get to see it in other things, like American Hustle, and there was something, the one with Bradley Cooper.
Silver Linings Playbook. Yeah. That's what she won the Oscar
yeah.
for.
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't seen much. What's she up to these days?
She had a kid.
Oh,
and,
did she?
Yeah. And also, she's 35 and you're not allowed to be that.
Yeah. No, yeah. She's no longer an ingenue.
Right. She might come back in 10 years as a mom.
Right.
Right.
Wow.
I still don't like that there's not really a climactic battle.
Right. There's just a bunch of these smatterings of things.
You know, smack in the middle, we have the few little, hunger. We're in the games, but not really.
Boiling
sequences.
Acid.
Do they?
Attacked by venom.
Do they yeah. outrun liquid at one
they
point?
They sure do.
Like slowly.
Yeah.
Over a great deal of time.
Flow.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the mutts. I wrote down in my notes that they
was
look
that the vampires,
yeah, the
looking
the
things,
creatures,
the
right.
I Am Legends.
Yes.
So the thing that I thought of was the monsters in The Descent, but I watched this late at night and I wrote down looks like the monsters in The Descendants. Which
apathetic Hawaiian men.
White Hawaiians.
Right. Right.
Yeah, there was some descent-like qualities. And also, so were they mutts? Is that what that was? Because because it just seemed like really out of place of everything else that was happening.
This is happening 10 years later, because we'll save it for You Can't Handle the Truth, but I saw Until Dawn last night, and at one point they're like, if you're stuck in this place too long, you become a I never decided how to pronounce it. Wendigo.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, good. Wendigo content. And it's also just a tall, stretchy, toothy, pale monster. Yeah. Like, that's the default CGI monster for 10 years.
I mean, in a certain way, that's the default folklore monster, right? Like,
I guess.
Regardless, this was not very compelling character design or content. Peril, I was pretty bored during the fake Hunger Games.
I thought the Soar was tense. I didn't like them, but I did think that the sequence when they attack in the sewer.
Yeah, that's when things started to get really good, especially Finnick got to see him in work.
Yeah.
I was like, yes, finally, like, you know, use your trident. Yeah. Like, go, boy, go. Mm-hmm. And then, you know,
well, that's really
RIP.
Sad. Yeah.
That was rough. And he was like, I kind of felt like he's calling her name. Like, I know I've read the book or whatever, but I don't really remember. He's calling her name, and she's like, okay, I'll blow you up. Wait. I'm calling your name for help. I need you to come get me. don't send down a bomb. Send down a rope.
I also love the idea of, like, let's just make this map a bomb just in case.
Right. You got to say Nightlack 3 times, turn around and twist and do the hokey pokey, and then it'll boom.
Just in case. Also, Also, I kept thinking, I know you shouldn't think about these things. I'm sorry again for the cinema sins of it all. But, like, did they, like, shut down streets in the Capitol so they could set up these booby traps? Is it like, sorry, there's a detour. We need to put this death tar in place.
I was wondering. And then, like, what? And then thinking, like, okay, what's it engages? Yeah. So you guys got to come back and refill it and, like, relaunch it again? Because all the bullets in the gun, you know, the gun is like, okay, it's over.
Right, because even though the, like, Katniss is theoretically dead, right? Yeah. So, like, or is that when they announce that she's killed? No, they say when she gets shot.
When the building gets blown up.
Oh, okay.
Is when they say that she was in there and dead.
They fake that she dies in the train station. And that's when Donald Sutherland kills the guy for buying that, which I do love.
Which also, shout out Robert Kepner. I love him so much. Mm-hmm. He's from Toledo. Shout out.
Oh, cool. No, that scene is great.
Yeah.
Donald Sutherland is so good.
Why would you eat around snow? Yeah. Like, no. Like, he is notorious for poisoning motherfuckers, and people still continually go to his dinner parties. Why?
It's like hanging out with Hannibal Lecter. Right?
It needed more of him, frankly. That's one of the... We burned through a lot of snow content in part one.
Yeah.
I loved that he was just waiting in the... The greenhouse. It's like, yeah, that's where they would keep him. Like, they're not going to just put him in a jail cell, you know, as two security. It's like, you know what? Go hang out with your flowers.
Go symbolically bleed onto these white roses.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he was great. I don't like Julianne Moore in this.
Julianne Bohr. I cannot stand her in anything. There's nothing.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I really like her most of the time. She's boring in this.
I think
her wig.
I think in this really it's good. Because that character sucks. Yeah. Like, that is one of the problems with this is, what did you think was going to happen?
Right.
As the leader here.
Yeah.
Like, did you, is this a... You know, because we swept away the old regime, no one will notice that I'm just as bad. Like, is that your actual plan?
This is an incredibly frustrating trope. And I do understand that there is some real world underpinning for this. Like, if you look at Latin America in the 20th century, like, when you overthrow a government, that does not necessarily mean you replace it with something worse. And I feel like that is, or just as bad. And I feel like that is a hugely conservative message. Like, this movie is about revolutionaries, but is like, don't bother. Like, that's fucked up.
Yeah, because there's something like Plutarch, I think, says something about you know, or somebody mentions, you know, it'll be good until, like, we forget how bad it was or whatever, and, you know, until we remember.
I mean,
that
again,
we all suck.
We're recording this in the United States of America in 2025. Right. Like, it's frustrating to me how shallow parts of this movie are.
But, like, back to, like, your earlier question was, like, why did we need Katniss? Why did Coin need Katniss? I think it's just about optics. Nobody knew who the fuck Coin was.
Yeah.
And so nobody's going to rally around Coin the way that they were rallying around Katniss. Their world has seen this young girl defy the Capitol in whatever way she possibly could, and they're like, yes.
Maybe that's part of the problem I have, because therefore, so much of this movie is about media relations, which is interesting conceptually, but not practically interesting. Right. And so there's this whole repeated constant cycle of, they need Katniss to do something. Katniss doesn't want to do that because it's a dumb, bad idea. Haymitch or Plutarch or Gales has to go in to be like, actually, you have to. So she goes like, I won't, but I'll be there because someone needed shot with an arrow. And then she does the thing anyway. Like, that's weird action. That's weird storytelling.
Yeah. Also, what I was saying specifically is that woman who eventually becomes the president after she assassinates Coin, who does the black lady who does the, like, inspirational speech.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I'm like, you have this woman who clearly is capable of inspiration. And wants to.
Yeah, I don't remember. Where does she even come from? Like,
they don't really say.
One of the districts?
Okay. I assume so. Don't really say. They don't really care about, like, I think they only include that speech so that we know who they're talking about when they say we are going to elect this other president.
Gotcha, yeah.
It's an odd one. And it's very beige. That's the other problem with this series. It's very beige and gray.
Because they're underground.
Yeah.
I know, but
And I would have liked a little bit more reactionary with these 13 folks coming up and like Coin is out there in the bright sun. Like, when's the last time you saw sun?
Probably not in a while.
We had dystopias in the 80s, and they were glowing like Spencer's Gift at all time. That is a choice you're allowed to make.
Right. And also, think about what we know about the Capitol from the previous movies, mm-hmm. is that it's gaudy, yeah. right? Like, think
about... We meet a tiger lady.
Right. So, shouldn't
more that
be reflected in the architecture?
Yeah.
What? I don't know. Maybe the Capitol purposefully keeps their architecture. That's the base.
And, all right, it's the blank canvas.
Right, exactly. And they're completely switching out. Now there's no one there to do that.
Okay, all right.
It's because, bizarrely, those scenes were filmed on location in Paris and Rome.
We
can rate it pretty soon. It feels like episode 4 of a Marvel Disney Plus series. Like,
yeah. Wow. Like, such a good way of putting it.
Like, you've got me invested, and I am waiting around to see what happens, but what's going on right now is not interesting. It really invites distracted viewing. It really is like, look at your phone, fold the laundry.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because this is supposed to be building to the climax of the whole series.
Exactly. This is the epic conclusion.
Yeah.
I also, like, it occurred to me that it's basically, like, Katniss volunteered for her sister, and mm-hmm. she just would have done the damn thing, mm-hmm. you know, won, lose, whatever. But it was, like, Haymitch who started her on this path with the star-crossed lovers thing, mm-hmm. and then the Game Makers really opened her up for the Defiance when they switched out, when they tricked her, saying that, oh yeah, two players can win this mm-hmm. one. Well, sorry, we can't. So it's their own fault. Like, mm-hmm. they created her in mm-hmm. this sense. It's not like she came in there like, yeah, I'm going to fuck shit up. It's like, and so it's along this whole time, it's just everybody's telling Katniss what to do and yeah. how to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I find it so sad that her answer is, I'm going to talk to my baby.
One of these days, I'll tell you how I won a war. Yeah. Or whatever.
That said, I liked it fine.
Yeah, it was fine. But again, like, I noticed, like, why I watched all of them
mm-hmm.
up to this, and I realized why I never come back to this one.
I was certain while watching this that I had never seen it before. And then I went to Letterboxd to log it, and it was like, you have watched this film 3 stars. And I was like, have I?
It's the only modern franchise that I like that I would never consider watching on my own time.
Right.
Mm. Like, when I was into Harry Potter, I would watch those if they were on TV. I had a couple of the Blu-rays. Yeah. Even Marvel, like, there's so much Marvel that you don't need to, but, like, I'll get a glimmer of, like, do I want to watch Captain America Civil War or Deadpool versus Wolverine? I think I might. With this one, I'm like, there's no way I'm watching those. No. I liked them. It's over. Like, you know, shall we rate it?
I just want to say, I wrote down, that movie is so dark, I'm like that lady with the pen light, the girlfriend in High Fidelity. I was just like, she's a film critic, which is unassailably cool, but then he gets mad at her for taking physical notes with mm-hmm. a pen light. With a light on a pen. That's not really a pen light. You know what I mean. Anyway, mm-hmm. this movie.
Okay, so just before we rate it, the final question, when they ask, like, voting for a new Hunger Games for, like, just the Capitol?
Yeah.
Would you vote yes or no?
Oh, my God, no.
I know I'm the only one in the room that will defend Rick and Morty. There's a Rick and
Morty. That's true.
I've never watched it.
There's a Rick and Morty episode where they land on a purge planet, a planet that has an annual purge.
Yeah.
And, you know, they convince them to stop purging, and then 5 seconds later, there's an argument, and someone says, maybe if there were one day a year where we could be violent. It's like, we just solved this.
Right.
Like, this was your only idea? It's like, yeah. I think now that we've abolished the Hunger Games, what we should do is get people in an arena and have them fight to the death. Like, no.
Hear me out. When they said they had, like, Snow and hundreds of other people that were waiting to be executed,
yeah,
I thought we were talking, put them in the Hunger Games.
Yeah, I not don't that, like, do like, that like, either. It's children, my
leave the children out of it.
Also,
leave
I thought they just blew up the children was the other thing.
Not all the children.
I guess not.
It's a big capital.
Was it the Capitol's children? And also, I was still... And I don't remember why Prue was even there.
She's a medic now.
Yeah, but how did she, like, why was 13 bringing their medics?
I think that Primrose came with the, like, I think that she is basically an army medic. Like, I think that she came in with
the troops soldiers. That were.
Yeah.
That's bullshit. She's 13.
Well,
listen,
probably 15 now. I like that you said Prue.
Oh, sorry.
Combining Primrose and Rue,
but that's
because
important.
Narratively, yeah. They're the same.
That's right. Literally the point.
Yeah. I always do that.
Yeah. No, because you're meant to. She, every time Rue comes up, she's like, she reminds me so much of my sister.
Starting on 59, added 3 for a cat opening the floodgates, took 1 away for the baby. 61.
What did I give the last one?
You gave the last one a 56.
Okay, I'm going to give this a 58 because I said it's basically the same as the last one, plus 2 for when Donald Sutherland corrects Julianne Moore by going, plucked.
I think I gave the last one 75. Mm-hmm. 66.
So you think this one's worse?
Yeah, it's okay. Just not as dynamic.
It certainly is not dynamic in any way.
No.
61 and 2/3, just a shade below the last. Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 1 was a 64. This is just 2 points and change below. They did about the same thing.
In the trailer.
I've been watching you. And you watching me. Make no mistake. The game is coming to its end.
For the first time in our lifetimes, we're standing together with 13 districts. Our future starts tomorrow at dawn, when we march together into the Capitol. To slow our advance, President Snow is building a minefield of traps.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 76th Hunger Games.
Snow has to pay for what he's done.
Our lives were never ours. They belong to Snow, and our deaths do too. But if you kill him, Katniss, all those deaths, they mean something.
Tonight, turn your weapons to the Capitol. Turn your weapons to Snow.
I feel like the trailer led us astray.
What has been the point of a trailer for the last entry of one of these movies? I feel like the only moment that has any hit at all is Philip Seymour Hoffman's face. It's of like, just... oh, the good, he's still in this one.
No, I think for me, it was like, it gets you amped, man. Because I love, that's one of the things I love about going to movies is the anticipation, mm-hmm. like the trailers and the how much I get amped up to go. And then it's just like, yeah, fuck yeah. So I'm assuming this is what people feel watching sports. So that's why that's what this gave to me.
That's
this
legit.
Trailer. And it's like, wow, what a big letdown. Like, did not leave up. The trailer was so much more exciting.
I will say it
overpromised because there's way more Donald Sutherland in the trailer.
Right. Oh, that's true. I will say this edit is going to be short because so much of the trailer is as was the style at the time.
Your letterbox list is what happened to my sweet girl? She's
interesting.
Gone.
Interesting. I like this.
What is this?
About a young woman being, growing up into violence and Black Swan, Gone Girl, Ready or Not, Suspiria, The Witch, Ex Machina, Vox Lux.
Ex Machina.
Kill
Vox
Bill.
Lux.
Oh, I guess the.
Death Proof, Stoker, so this Fury
is,
Road.
So it was a nice little, it's in conversation with a Letterboxd list of good for her.
Good for her.
You're right.
Yes. Yes. Interesting. Bingo card.
Somebody had breakfast in one of those hospital beds, didn't they? Like, I feel like Katniss or PETA.
There's definitely food. I don't know if it's breakfast, but
I'm going to get something out of this. I'm going to take that. Yes. Breakfast in bed.
We all saw the same.
Yes, we did. This movie was 2015.
That's correct.
So this is the 10-year anniversary.
Happy anniversary. No one noticed.
Falsely accused killer?
Well, yes.
Yes, the Capitol, yeah. Right?
The Capitol is accused of, yeah.
Somebody has to have a bingo
no,
at this point.
This is insanity.
Goodness.
movie set in one of our home states depends on where you think District 13 is.
But this isn't really set in District 13, right?
It starts there.
Okay. And then we get to
District 12 is Appalachia. District 13, I always thought of as like New York.
District 13 is New York?
Yeah.
Really? Why?
Because it was a big, important place, wasn't it? Wasn't it like their...
Oh, I don't really know. Okay. I just always think of it as the underground. I don't remember.
I meant before.
Yeah, I don't remember.
In the before
what,
times.
Yeah, yeah, I don't remember what there were. Any talk of springtime still wouldn't give me a bingo, but is there talk? There's no talk of springtime.
No.
Title is
a... All right. Well, we have a heavy, like, we're bases are loaded for next episode.
This is crazy. Only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 open squares.
Yeah, that's bizarre. So, Sinners.
OMG. First of all, like, the first vampire movie to make me weep.
Interesting.
I walked out. That fucking, I don't use this term lightly or ever to describe a movie. Transcendent.
Mm-hmm.
I walked out of there in a daze. Like, this isn't, like, I, like, best movie, obviously, 2025. Like, all right, my number one. Where do you two stand on it?
I walked out, Sean and I saw it together, and I walked out going, I don't want to do the thing where I think this could have been an all-time great. It sounds like you think it is an all-time great. And so I'm mad at it for only being extremely good. But I think I was kind of doing that thing. But the more I think about it, the more I sit with it too. Because like my main thing was that I was like, I'm not 100% sure how to reconcile... Sean and I was like, is the point of this that if you're too good at music, the devil, aka white people, shows up? And Sean was like, well, no. I actually think the beginning was sort of tying the Irish folk music into the black music.
Yeah, because they're very deliberate to go indigenous Americans, black people, Irish people in the beginning. They're saying, if you're too good at music, just the devil shows up. And they're trying to make that more broad than
Was the Irish music meant to be too good? This is where my personal preferences come into play.
That Road to Dublin number is pretty great.
Pretty dope. I don't think that was the whole the devil will come if you're too good at music. I don't think that was the point at all.
It's more that people around the world use music to transcend.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. There's that.
And that can invite both good and evil.
Yeah. I see it. My first instinct when I walked away from there was one, fake allies.
Very good.
When the Irish dude, Rennick, when he comes through and is like, we're just the same, you know, we all have blah, blah, blah. And then also they want our rhythm, but not our blues. When he is telling them, you know, I want your stories. I want your music. So that's that is the cultural appropriation right there. And so those are like the two big things that I walked away from. I haven't had a chance to watch it again, but I have been thinking this about this whole thing over again. Again, trust black women, because Annie from Jump Street, which is one of the things I loved from it. She's like, nope. I thought they were whatever, but they're vampires, and everybody around her like, yep,
best
I believe
character
you.
In the movie.
Yes, and everyone believed her and went to work and did what they were supposed to do. There wasn't one person was like, are you sure?
Sean.
I as soon as the credits rolled, I turned to Robin and said, I would watch all of that again right now.
Yeah.
And I also want to get back to it because I'm like, I think the 9 out of 10 I gave it was an underrating, you know, because in the moment I didn't want to like, there's that partial reluctance to like leap out of your chair and yell best movie ever. Mm. But I said to Jacob, the producer of the DVE morning show, who also saw it and loved it and ran in on Friday morning to talk to me about it. This feels like it will actually enter the conversation and live in our minds in a way that movies don't really that often anymore.
True.
You know, that this is that this feels like it's in that Jaws, Shawshank Redemption place where it'll play on whatever the equivalent of cable is forever and will just become a reference point because so many of the characters are so good. What happens is so good. There's so many memorable scenes and it is a movie that takes its time and delivers. This wouldn't be nearly as good without a full hour of going around town.
High noon in reverse.
Yes. Robin leaned over and said, this is high noon. Do you know high noon?
Yeah.
This is high noon in reverse. We're going to go around town, ask for help, and everyone's going to say, fuck it, sure.
And evoke these deep, past relationships that as soon as they start talking to each other, it's like, oh, this is interesting, right?
Yo.
And I just, oh my God. The characters are so deep, even when they have so little screen time. Uh-huh. They're just so... Mm-hmm. They go all the way down to the core.
The sound design, when Delroy Lindo is telling his story about his friend that he knew way back when, it's like, and it's real fucking subtle, and you don't catch it until it's almost too late. And when you hear like the screams, and like, I'm like, oh my, like chills. And then the best scene ever, the whole, you know, the
music.
The cross culture of everything, like the past, present, when the veil is lifted, past, present, and future. And then just like, and I don't know how many people are actually going to understand the reference, but when the roof catches on fire, that's the roof is on fire. Let this motherfucker burn.
Yeah.
Like
my I'm a joyless feminist thing was how come there's no gay people in this montage? Like there should be people voguing through that.
I don't remember.
That's my joyless feminism. Sorry, it's coming in our next one too.
There were some jumpsuits. Read it onto the people in jumpsuits.
Okay.
That
was an incredible sequence. I'm just being a jerk.
The only thing that held me back from going 10 out of 10 when I walked out was I thought like maybe it had a little too much beginning and a little too much end.
I'm obsessed with the end and we need to talk about
because I don't want to spoil it.
No, we're going to spoil it. And I'm going to jump in as editing Robin and tell you when to fast forward if you have not yet seen Sinners. And if you have not yet seen Sinners, what's wrong with you?
Go! Now!
Hi, this is editing Robin letting you know that we talk about Sinners for the next 7 minutes and 36 seconds. The very spoilery stuff is the next 3.5 minutes or so. If you haven't seen it yet, just fast forward for now and then go to the movies.
I have to talk about
because
it.
I'm like, do we need a flash forward, you know, the 24 hours earlier thing? And do we need opening narration? And then I'm like, do we need all these epilogues? But all of that has really stuck with me.
Yeah.
And I do kind of knee-jerk reaction against the like dramatic thing 24 hours earlier. Mm. But like when it's done this well and you do spend the whole up until the last sequence, you're like, but how does that result in what we saw at the beginning of the movie?
Right.
Like, I think it is every day it gets better in my mind.
Yeah. Agreed. I agree. I think I agree with you. I'm not 100% sure about that choice. I do want to see the movie again before I'm.
Same.
What are we doing? Let's go. Let's go.
Right, I know, right? Seriously.
I gotta edit this episode is what I gotta do. But anyway, so the ending is so weird and so great. Mm-hmm. And the analogy that I have been telling improvisers, neither of you may get this, but some of our listeners will, is that so when you're doing improv, the booth puts on a blue light when the show's about to end, right? And you kind of use that as like, all right, let's wrap things up, okay? Sometimes you're like, the end, and then the blackout doesn't come. And you just have to do more scene. Uh-huh. And usually it's terrible, but every now and then it is, to borrow a word, transcendent, right? And I felt like that end scene gave so much richness to everything that came before. Mm. And the like, I might cry talking to you, like you said. The fact that, which, is it Smoke or Stack?
Stack.
Stack stays with...
Mary?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm.
Became incredibly meaningful to me.
Right.
Because the only way they could be together was as the undead.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that is powerful. And then Smoke and Annie... choose to die together to be reunited with their dead kid. And so it's like either the people who found their peace through death and the people who found their peace through being undead.
Yeah.
And like, wow, that is really powerful.
Yeah.
And then just also that like that truce that they have and just and when he says like, I am this old and I still wake up in terror because of that night.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah. Yeah,
sounds
we do.
Right.
And also the great buddy guy. I mean, come on. I was like, I just thought it was going to be just him playing.
Yeah.
And I was like, great cameo.
And I was like, super's like, oh shit. Oh, we've got more story.
just really changes the whole movie in a really positive way.
Yeah. I, my only, like, I, at first walking away, I kind of thought that my first reaction was that Michael B. Jordan, as much as I love him, is not a strong enough actor to pull off two different characters in the same movie.
I've like forgot that they are the same person.
Yeah.
Like the scene where he hands over the cigarette, everybody's like, how'd they even pull that off? And yeah. I'm like, it didn't even occur to me that they had to. But you are not wrong. Everybody keeps saying this. It's right. Just not what happened to me.
Yeah. But you know, again, but I'm not, you know, it's not, it's, that's what kind of gave, why it's not a perfect five on my letterbox. Mm-hmm. That, and like the spitting scene. But I also like, I wish that I had gone into this not knowing that it was a vampire movie.
Okay.
Because like the first...
I didn't know, but I knew.
Yeah, like yeah. The first teasers that they were showing us, it was just like that end scene where he's mm-hmm. where smoke comes out and he's like shaking.
You know,
and
it's doing,
you know,
evil.
Something. Yeah, yeah, you know something is bad. Something right. horrible has gone down. But you don't know. Like, I just kind of wish, like, I would have loved that for me. Like, mm-hmm. just on a personal level. And it just to have like that kind of a From Dusk Till Dawn kind of vibe as to where the first
oh
half of the movie
God.
Is not necessarily that. And also... shout out, and I don't know what the tribe is specifically, but the Native Americans that roll in and are just like, hey, danger's coming. No, we don't want you. All right, I tried. And then they go off.
Right.
You know, deuces. Like,
I forget who I was talking to, but I said, I love that so much. Because someone was like, I expected them to come back. I'm like, I love that they didn't.
Yeah, right?
It's like, we told you, and we know how this ends.
Right.
We're going back home.
Good luck.
You know where we didn't build our home? There. So
may the odds be ever in your favor.
And you mentioned the sound design, that just so much of the craft was incredible and subtle. Like the costumes were so, like the way that Smoke and Stack dress, where you can tell that they really take pride in their appearance,
yeah.
but there's still little tiny frays in their clothing,
yeah,
right? And it's right. just like, oh, Ruth Carter.
Yeah. Oh, love her.
There's no reason you can't nominate Michael B. Jordan twice. I don't think there's, I mean, you can
no,
tell
I'm
me.
I'm pretty sure that there's a rule.
He's
like
doing
like
two
Kate
jobs.
Winslet
really?
Couldn't get nominated
was
for both Revolutionary Road and The
Lupita
Reader.
Nominated for anything for us?
No.
Still mad about
I'll
it?
I'll die mad about it.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
But I agree
Let's
with what you
again.
Were saying, Sean, about this is a movie that's going to stick around in the culture. And mm-hmm. I think that it's super interesting. You know, so much of the coverage of this is that it was like a, air quotes, surprise box office success, which is mostly people refuse to believe that black people go to the movies.
Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, this is a show predicated on box office. That's not really why we do mm-hmm. it, so we can randomly generate movies.
Yeah.
But I do think it's super interesting that this movie that didn't get a ton of promotion and sort of feels like it came out of nowhere. And then it won. Did it win 3 weekends?
It won 2 weekends.
Okay.
The remarkable thing is it basically made the same amount of money 2 weekends
which
in a row. Which
rarely
happens and really doesn't happen anymore.
Right.
And, you know, is doing well. It is actually being carried by critical response and word of mouth, which are supposed to be irrelevant these days.
But, look at us. Well,
yeah, here we go.
Look at us now, Dad.
word of mouth more than critical response,
okay,
let's be
but
honest.
I have been word of mouthing it all over the place. I feel like for that first week, every room I walked into, I was like, who saw Sinners?
Yeah.
Right. And I don't know, like, I knew about this. Like, this was, I talked about this in our
yeah.
December
You
one.
Were the person who told me about it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I guess it's just, you know, those, whoever follow Ryan Coogler and Michael B., that's who was quote unquote in the know.
Right.
The smart movie theaters, even the chains, are now, when you go to a horror movie, you just see 7 horror trailers.
Yeah.
From mm-hmm. Blumhouse down to like Neon and A24.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're like, these people still
right.
are showing up.
Mm-hmm.
They're horror people are generally interested in anything as long as we slap the horror label on
right.
it. Let's show. So I've seen this trailer 15 times starting in like October.
That makes sense.
And
I didn't.
And,
yep.
That makes sense. I did see it at least once and go, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Ryan Coogler gets the rights back in 25 years, which mm-hmm. means
yeah.
this, it's going to be a lasting thing that's going to be on the, whatever the equivalent of TBS is.
Mm-hmm.
Good
yeah,
for him.
Right, exactly.
I never get sick of the shining camera angle.
Oh, I know, right?
Someone leaning against a door shot from beneath.
Right.
You see it 4 times a year, and every time I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, you do.
They did the thing. There are other movies out. Do you want to talk about Thunderbolts?
I'm being a grumpy feminist about Thunderbolts.
Oh, is that?
No, it's actually really good. Like, or it's not, you know, it's a
it's a good Marvel movie.
Right. But for a latter day Marvel movie, it is really fun, entertaining, cast is on point. And I started to get really invested, like the bad guy's depression.
Oh.
And at first when they were depicting depression, I was like, oh, wow, this is actually kind of meaningful. Like I was tearing up.
Yeah.
And then the way that they defeat the bad guy is that the pretty girl is nice to the depressed guy.
I want to give you an out if you want to like this movie more.
Okay.
No, it's that one of the best treatments for depression is Community.
Okay. Mm.
And it's the pretty girl talking to him because she's the lead of the movie, not because she's the pretty girl.
Yeah, then make sure that you have everyone come together at that moment as opposed to just her.
You don't think it would have been cheesy if the Thunderbolts had a big group hug?
Of course it would have been cheesy.
Yeah.
They end the movie with a Diane Warren song. Yeah. They know.
Yeah, that's true.
They're very self-aware.
I appreciate your reading, and I see why that would feel like. But to me, I'm like, this is the movie that didn't take the shortcut. Because in so many Marvel movies, in Act 1, it's like, oh, Iron Man had a feeling today. And by Act 2, he's just punching a robot. And this is the movie where, no, it's about depression from beginning to end. And so I want to give it credit for, you know, the review I wrote was all about how, like, actually, I think this is a bold choice. I think that in making, in not even pretending that the villain that we get, no spoilers, I guess, that the villain that we get is the actual problem.
Yeah.
That's, you know, a mature, interesting, you know, mid-phase, late-phase, whatever the hell we're in, choice for Marvel.
Right.
So, you know, if that bothered you, that's valid. And I don't want to be like, no, wrong interpretation. But you can choose not to if you don't.
I mean, this is a movie that I probably will watch again whenever it hits Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. And I may feel differently. Then it was a movie I was really enjoying and walked out really mad. I thought Florence Pugh was great. She's always good.
She is.
But I love that she is not phoning it in.
No.
Speaking of Jennifer Lawrence. That was great. Her teal eyeliner. I hope that becomes a trend. The under eyeliner thing is beautiful. And Lewis Pullman, apparently Bill Pullman's kid.
Didn't know that until yesterday.
Okay. Found out this morning. My friend Jennifer told me. I read a bunch of Letterboxd reviews because that's what I do to not doom scroll. All the girlies are obsessed with him. And I'm like, I thought he was very charming, but this feels just like when Adam Driver came up and people were like, he's hot. And I'm like,
stop trying to make fetch happen.
Apparently, all the girlies love Lewis Pullman.
I just love.
Nope. His dad has it, but no, right? Not so much.
I was surprised, and I guess I shouldn't because I've seen enough of them in other movies and in some of the series and blah, blah, blah. I was pleasantly surprised that Florence Pugh, David Harbour, and Sebastian Stan is a great central superhero team trio with Wyatt Russell and Hannah John Kamen, like in the wings. She's barely in it, but I love her. And I that's the one like C tier Marvel villain that I'm like, actually Ghost was cool.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
But yeah,
I didn't even remember the other person.
No, I had to look up several times.
Oh yeah.
And like I looked up and then I was like, wait, what did I just read? Like,
I cannot remember. But I will say, I saw a skeet that was like, you know what? If you're worried about, I don't even know what's going on with Marvel, just walk into it like it's any other ragtag movie.
Yeah.
And you absolutely can do that. Like, I was, you know, thinking, I just watched the first Mission Impossible, and that just starts with, this is the team, accept it.
Yeah.
Right? So you can absolutely enjoy Thunderbolts if you just go in and say, this is the team, accept it.
Yeah, I feel like a new semester began.
Yeah.
You know, because I know what's coming. I know what's coming next. I know that the thing that's coming next, for time reasons, does not require any homework.
Yeah.
And I feel like because of Jonathan Majors, we swept away a lot of the last three years.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're kind of at a
turning point?
Yeah, okay. I hope.
Well, hopefully,
I hope.
There is a lot to like about this movie, and I hope that they are able to keep that momentum going.
Robin, what else did you see besides those
two? Another Simple Favor.
Oh, yeah,
I was
there, too. Sorry, Camila, do you want to leave and come back for a while?
I got some stuff to do.
Have you seen A Simple Favor?
Yeah, I saw the first one. I liked it.
Yeah, I would recommend the second one. It's very much like remember how fun that was? Let's do it more, but sequel-y, so it's a little bit over the top. But, like, I'm okay with a little bit over the top.
But it sucks now that I'm feeling some kind of way about Blake. Because when I watched the first one, I liked Blake Lively.
That was the first time I ever liked her.
And because I liked her in those pants. The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants,
which I should.
Yeah. It's so good. Yeah. They're so good. But now I'm just kind of like, Blake, like, it's really.
Wait, because of the thing where.
With Justin and.
Yeah, but like, that's, she's innocent. She was victimized. Yes. I'm going to send you an article, Camila.
You have seen various information that was paid for in a targeted disinformation campaign to defame her.
The same people who did it with Amber Heard.
That's the thing.
Literally the same people.
But here's what you're not hearing.
I'm not to yell at you, like you're wrong. I'm
feeling some kind of way about Justin as well. I went through liking this about him too. I personally don't feel like either one of those motherfuckers are innocent. Quote unquote. Like both of them somewhere along the way, blah, blah, blah. I'm not saying that, you know, fuck Blake Lively. I'm just saying I have a different opinion personally about her now. I'm not like.
That makes sense.
I'm not trying to boycott her.
She did get married on a plantation also. Like, I don't want to be
like. There's some other shit. Yeah.
I think they probably both kind of suck.
Right.
But one of the nice things about both Simple Favor movies, and I think this will help you watching this, is. The movie just plays into that.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
Like she's an evil shit that you're still like, but you're good looking and funny.
And you have the best outfits.
Her clothes were amazing in that first one.
They continue that trend.
Mm-hmm. No, I liked it. It is very Beach Read. It is very soap opera. Sure. It is very like, what? This twist? That twist? The mafia? What's happening? But that's just fun. It's just fun.
And we saw a theatrical screening, which doesn't really exist for normal people. I think that maybe the soap opera-ness of it is more effective on a TV screen.
Sure.
Because it fits on a TV screen. Right. But I haven't rewatched it, although I should, so that Amazon keeps making them. I was saying the other day, it was like, I wish that we could get one of these every other year, and then on the off years, get a Benoit Blanc.
So it's free on Prime already?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Jeez. It's a Prime original.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we just had a screening.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And it ends at a location that Mary Beth and I just went to on our honeymoon. Aww. And we went, oh, look at that.
Leo Point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
I don't think so.
Camila?
I had no power for a week. And prior to that, I was watching You.
You?
Oh, the series?
Yeah, on Netflix. Mm.
That creeps me out.
Yeah, it creeps me out too. That's why I'm here.
Okay. Why I'm watching it.
That creeps me out. And that means I walked away and it creeps you out. And you were like, all right.
Like, let's open this door a little bit further. Gonna get these windows for you, Pen.
Turns out I've seen so many movies since the last time we recorded. So,
can I briefly talk about The Shrouds?
Yes.
The Cronenberg?
Oh, I haven't seen it.
You should see it, Sean. Okay. All right. Maybe we'll just come back when it's. I want to say, surprisingly not gross. Yeah. Maybe one of the least gross Cronenbergs.
Because his recent one was real gross. Crimes of the Future?
Oh, nowhere near. And like, it's gross in that, like, you know, the plot is that he creates this technology that lets you watch your loved ones decompose. But like, that's barely shown. The grossest part of it is there's a part where the emoji creation of his dead wife tries to tease him about fucking someone else, and she like moves her tongue around. That's the grossest part of the whole movie.
Oh my.
Why would we want this technology?
That's the point.
We have a lot of technology we don't want.
Yeah.
Look around.
I like Vincent Castle.
I love him. I've loved him ever since he did aerobics through the Laser Grid, Ocean's 12.
Yes, thank you.
And I loved him in Black Swan, and I love him. And this movie, I love movies about grief.
Guy Pearce.
He's very weird in it. It's a Cronenberg. It's extremely weird. It makes some choices that I can't quite reconcile, and yet I walked out being like, yep. This occurred to me during the storm that took out Camila's power for a week. Mm-hmm. Or I watched this, and I never would have known. Harris Theater, good storm shelter.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Also, it's fun. Every time I see a movie there, I'm like, oh, Sean got married here.
Yes. Yes, I did. Okay. I saw many things. I saw the Minecraft movie. I actually liked it.
I'm shocked. I mean, I'm not shocked, because you don't have to watch as much Kid Drek.
I 6 out of 10 liked it.
I would have expected 4 as your ceiling.
Because it is, it is competent filmmaking, which kind of brings you to average most of the time, with the bonus that it's directed by the Napoleon Dynamite guy who put just enough of that
whimsy,
and kind of madcap energy into it. You can tell they didn't let him put too much because it's still a very family-friendly, four-quadrant corporate package. But there's just enough of, you know, Jack Black operating a chicken stand that cooks chickens by dumping lava on them and then singing a lava chicken song, which is which is somehow a 37-second song that's in the Billboard Hot 100 right now because people are so into it. There's just enough of that to be like, I had fun, you know? The cast is funny, you know, it's just good enough. If you're a grumpy old theater owner that's like, these kids shouldn't be throwing popcorn, they're establishing their love for the movie. Have you followed this whole thing?
Of course I have, but I don't think it's the theater owner so much as the cleaning staff.
Well, yeah, some of the ushers are like, this behavior is like...
What are they doing?
If you go to the subreddit for movie theater employees, they truly are like saluting each other, like once more into the breach.
It's starting to die down now, although now they're going to have rowdy screenings as if they're...
Oh, God.
There's a moment, for some reason, it just became a meme. There's a moment where a baby Frankenstein rides a chicken and has to fight Jason Momoa, and Jack Black yells chicken jockey in a very Jack Black fashion, and everyone yells chicken jockey along with Jack Black and loses their shit, and so like the kids are like throwing their popcorn into the air and everything, and I'm like, the extra hours you are spending sweeping are an investment into the future of your business, because these kids are forming an attachment with an emotional experience at the movie theater. It's worth it. It
25 years from now, this is going to be a special screening of Minecraft where it's like, and here's popcorn for you to throw.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, you're so right.
I
also think you should volunteer for a cleaning shift. If that's
okay. I've done it. I put there. In my time,
right.
Damn it.
Samesies.
Havoc. Have you not watched Havoc yet?
Not yet.
I also haven't watched it yet.
Motherfucker didn't have power.
Just you had a week before that. I know you have a kid and stuff.
Partially didn't watch it yet because I wanted Camila to watch it first and then like give me a temperature. I want to know what expectations.
Basically, Robin, it's starting here. Like, it's Tom Hardy and Timothy Oliphant.
I know. Yeah.
It's starting at 9.
I know.
There's some real terrible shit's gonna have to happen for it to go down.
I liked it a good bit. It's kind of thin. This is the guy that did The Raid, which I've never seen, but I've heard a lot.
Oh, it's just fights throughout the whole thing. Yeah, I saw that.
And they're gunfights here, and so this is one of those movies where you do need to be shot 34 times in order to die. People get shot 6 times
and just keep going,
and it's like I stubbed my toe. Like you know,
they're tiny little bullets.
Yeah, That can be a little bit much, and it is one of those situations where, like, plus and minus, everyone's a bad guy. Everyone's crooked. Everyone's compromised. So, like, on the one hand, then you don't have to, like, think too hard. On the other hand, where they're like, well, so-and-so was working with so-and-so. It's like, I don't care. They all suck. Whatever. Just see who shoots who. It's
blow
fine.
Something else up.
But it's definitely a fun watch, and so much better than a lot of, especially the action stuff on Netflix, that I think you'll enjoy it. No one will enjoy The Accountant 2. What a bad idea. Bad idea that was.
That's too bad.
Especially because, I mean, one, because the movie came out 10 years ago and no one remembers it, so why are you doing a sequel now? Especially because the central, like, I don't even want to say the central story because they don't spend enough time on it. The inciting incident, the plot device that moves things along is seriously about a migrant family getting torn apart and, like, some of them die and we don't know what happened to the kid and mom is gonna... And then it'll do that and, like, cut to the scene where Ben Affleck is having an awkward time at speed dating because he's neurodivergent and it's like...
Read the room.
No. No one's seeing that. So continue not seeing that.
Wow.
Last night, big drive-in double feature for me. I went out to Dependable to see Until Dawn and Hell of a Summer.
Oh.
Back to back. If I had watched either of these at home, wouldn't be in the positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it definitely helped. Like, I'm in a happy, peaceful place.
Hell of a Summer seems like an ideal drive-in movie, except for the part where I thought it was bad. But just the vibes, I mean.
I crawled to like two and a half stars and a reluctant like on Hell of a Summer.
Like, you are the person I know who I'd be like, you know what you should check out? Hell of a Summer.
This is like, yeah, this is like perfect fodder for a drive-in and make-out session kind of thing. Like,
ooh, yeah.
That's certainly what Finn Wolfhard was saying. Okay, I don't want to get, I don't want to get too racially focused on this. I can't help but notice that he wrote and directed a movie where a hot young black woman is really attracted to him. That seems like,
bless his heart.
That seems a little wish fulfillment on his part.
I just, she's so out of his league.
That was the thing. I was like. When like such a plot point is that she's really into him but not into his buddy, I'm like, they're the same.
Yeah.
They're the same human being.
Krista Nazaire, who plays Shannon.
That sounds right.
Yes. Shannon.
It's also set in the past for reasons.
What, in the 80s?
Oh no, it's not actually.
It's not set in the past. They put the cell phones away.
They put cell phones away. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they have old cars and names like Shannon.
Yeah.
You know what?
I feel like maybe I think this might be a Madam Web situation.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the movie, but to Sean's point, I could see her being like, "Oh, okay, we'll see." Not necessarily like, "Yes, like we're going to prom and we'll do this and okay. All right. I'll let you."
Young people really like that guy. They think he's super cute.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, the young girls like him. And I can see that.
They're in a captive environment. There's only so many counselors around.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I still love Fred Hechinger.
It's fine. It was a solid first draft that desperately needed punch up.
Yeah.
There's a few jokes that work. Mm-hmm. If that many worked much more frequently, it would be a great movie. Mm-hmm. It's just not all the way there. But
it's made by children.
Yeah. If you need a summer camp fix, you know, you'll get barely enough of it in Hell of a Summer. Until Dawn, too. It doesn't all the way work, but it has enough things kind of going for it. This is based on a PlayStation game from 10 years ago.
Right.
They find themselves in a spooky cabin, and they're in a
time loop.
They're in a time loop where if they survive the night, they can escape, but they keep not surviving the night. And
I want to see that.
After an indeterminate amount of failures, they will turn into Wendigos, as mentioned earlier.
Shout out Peter Stormare.
Peter Stormare's good.
I love him.
Apparently, he was the bad guy voice in the video game and reprising his role.
Oh, cool. I love that.
By the way, Letterboxd reviewers... Well, in the game, it's like, shut the fuck up. That's not important.
No, like maybe 10% of the people of the audience knows it was a game. No, I didn't know.
It's completely irrelevant. And hey, narrative in a video game that you sit with for 20 to 40 hours.
Right.
Has nothing to do with what an hour and a half movie is gonna. What the man? That's stupid. That said, this isn't great. The pace is a fucking mess because like they get a time loop will happen and one will be really short and then one will go on for 25 minutes and you're like, are we still on the same night? What they get to the last one and there's literally a montage where the guy's like, I found all these videos on my phone and we see like seven nights that we didn't actually
watch.
That's
cool.
And
I like that.
It's cool, but we're like, that happens like 10 minutes before the final confrontation.
Okay, that's
it's
a
like,
middle
what
of the
you,
movie kind of move.
Yeah. It has all kinds of problems. Again, seeing it at the drive-in in a good mood.
Makes sense.
Just barely got there.
Yeah, that does make sense.
So for horror fans, and thanks to everyone who came to the one-year anniversary of the Steel City Horror Show.
Congratulations.
Thank you, where we watched the 1990 Night of the Living Dead and brought out the director of that film, Tom Savini.
Cool.
Surprise guest.
Cool, cool, cool.
He was great. He is a Pittsburgh figure. You know, he is around and he just turns up places.
Yeah.
So I think when everyone saw him, there was an initial like, oh my God, Tom Savini is, it's like, yeah, he's a lot of places.
Yeah. Like I've probably run into him like more times than not.
But still, it felt great to be like, I have Tom Savini on my show.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, if you're in Pittsburgh and you haven't come to that, it's a great time. We'll be back Sunday, May the 25th. Your clue is which. Which is your clue?
Which?
That's what you got to be there to find out. I haven't talked about this that much. So we have a secret movie. You don't know what the movie is going to be. There is always some kind of tie-in performance or guest. Like, it was obvious with Night of the Living Dead, but like, we showed They Live and had a wrestling match. We showed Alligator and had someone bring in a baby alligator. You know, there's,
so this time you're gonna can get some spells cast.
Yes,
for
yes.
Money.
We're gonna.
There's gonna be a booth.
There's gonna be a booth. You're gonna pay a lady that looks like she lives in Allentown, and no. That's not what it's going to be. But yeah, and then my co-host, the mysterious Dr. Gielgud, who is also a specialist in haunted attractions and such, plans some little scares during the film. So the entertainment, while you're sitting there in the dark, something might happen. Oh my. And if you don't like that, the balcony is the safe space. You can sit in the balcony, and we don't bother you.
That is good to know.
And I know we have to wrap up. I have to wrap up. I have to be somewhere. One of these, we watched Lady in White. It was a late 80s ghost movie. And the guest was, earlier that week, we had like a paranormal investigator team come and inspect the theater itself. Uh-huh. And they said they got a lot of readings in the theater floor and none on the balcony. Even the spirits are obeying our it's scary down here and not up there rule.
Love it.
Isn't that nice? Let's draw a movie. Next time, if we feel like it, we will be discussing Despicable Me 3.
Are there any vetoes?
Sean and I both have a veto. I think...
Did we do a Despicable Me?
No.
I'm sorry. I'm really not in the mood.
Okay, great.
Veto.
Exercise my veto, man.
Yeah, all right. Thank you. Ooh.
These movies are fine.
Yeah, they're fine.
I'm doing this for the podcast because there is nothing to say about
these
movies.
You're right.
They're fine. They're pretty good. Right. Minions, good in small doses.
Yeah.
The end.
Okay.
Right. You know, it's instead.
Oh, please be something good. Something with a geek to beauty.
Remember when we did Star Trek? Do you want more right away?
Which one?
Insurrection. Star Trek Insurrection.
That's one of the bad ones, I think. Maybe not.
Was the last one of the bad ones or one of the good ones?
Right. Yes.
Which number is Insurrection? This is 98.
This is one of the new
generation cast.
Well, that's good. We got one of the original series. Now we'll get one of these.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, F. Murray Abraham is, isn't it? Shout out to
kind
of Pittsburgher F. Murray Abraham.
Yes.
Yeah, he's from here.
Yeah, he is
from
here.
He doesn't claim it a lot, but.
No. I think he mostly grew up somewhere else, but this is where he's originally from.
Oh, was raised in El Paso, Texas.
There you go.
Burton. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've never seen a Next Generation Star Trek movie.
Great.
Here we are.
Paramount Plus, so.
Hunger Games, Mockingjay, Part 2.
No idea.
Taylor Swift.
November 20th, 2015. What was the number one song in America? No, it wasn't Taylor Swift.
Justin Bieber.
No. What did you say?
Diplo?
No.
Drake?
I don't even know what I'm saying.
Mm-mm.
Rihanna.
Watch Me Nay Nay.
Neither of those things.
Is that even a song? Is that a thing?
It was a thing.
This is an artist that I've gotten oddly dismissive of in recent years. No, that's not odd. There's plenty of good reasons. This is an artist that most people are neutral to warm, that I, including on this podcast, have been like, blank is not actually good.
Katy Perry?
No, that would also not be odd.
Right. Beyonce?
No, that's... what? I think I'm speaking blasphemy onto the microphone? Like if I thought... I don't think that...
Lightning crashes down.
If I did think that, no one would ever know. Came up in a Bond episode.
Adele?
Yes.
Oh,
I don't know what she was up to. Is this Hello?
This is Hello.
Okay.
I was going to say, I've specifically said this is one of the two good songs by an artist I don't like very much.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I would be upset on Adele's behalf, but I'm still reeling from the moment I thought you didn't like Beyonce. nanosecond.
The nanosecond.
It's because even to have that thought enter one's mind is just so shocking and disruptive.
Although I will say, Beyonce, where the fuck is Renaissance, a film by Beyonce?
Been waiting for years.
We could be watching that instead of Star Trek Insurrection.
So rude.
Number one.